I'm Mike Lubega of the New York Daily News.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and this is the Sports Reporters Podcast, Monday morning post-Super Bowl. I have literally just walked into my office from being at the Super Bowl, and first of all, I want to say for those of you who listen to us regularly and heard us on Friday, we were all wrong because we all picked the Pats. I'm going to tell you when I knew I was wrong before the game even started, being there last night in Minnesota. Bryant Westbrook was brought onto the big giant screen by the Ryan Seacrest guy that they have narrating the pregame and now all the way through the entire game, because apparently you can't just watch a football game. You have to have it narrated to you. He came out. He did a little interview. And at the end, the guy said, "Do anything else you want to say?" He said, "Just one thing to the Philly fans. Fly, Eagles, fly." He started that thing. He started one line of it. The stadium sang the entire rest of the song. I said, "I'm at a Philly home game here." And there were Philly players out on the field, and you could see that energy in them. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Oops, oops, I think this is going to be closer than it was." And, of course, it turned out to be an amazing game with an amazing finish. Let's begin.
So are you saying that what the Patriots need is to get a song?
A song and a singer, apparently. Yeah, that's the problem. You need a better song.
We have plenty of singers. All right. Okay, well, fly equals fly. Good.
Well, Mitch, you've been listening to me. I just couldn't commit my heart fully to the Eagles, but you know I love their chances in this game.
Yeah, and you did.
No, but I had fallen in love with the Foles story. And Mitch, I wrote a column in the Daily News Sunday before the game saying that I honestly believed that the Eagles were pretty much better everywhere except at quarterback. And what happened last night was it was a fair enough fight at quarterback that Brady couldn't win the game. We'll get to the fumble in a minute. For all of the talk about the trick play at the end of the first half, and it was great, and it will be discussed forever the way Sean Payton's onside kick against the Colts that night was. But remember something, and Collinsworth was saying last night, well, that turned the game around. Well, no, it didn't. It didn't turn the game around because the Patriots ended up having the lead in the middle of the fourth quarter of a Super Bowl. To me, the gutsier call last night was Doug Peterson going for it from his own 45 on fourth and one, down a point because he wasn't going to risk falling any further behind. And Nick Foles, if you look, Mitch, you were there. So he was under pressure, and he made a throw to Zach Ertz that got him the first down by maybe
barely
3/4 of a yard. Okay, yep. He came down on the other side of the imaginary line. To me, that was, other than the fumble at the end, that was the biggest call of the game, because he wasn't going to make the mistake that we talked about the Jaguars making in the AFC Championship game. He was going to take the game right there, and he did.
But was there a slightest doubt in either of your minds that that was what was going to happen? I didn't even enter. I knew he was going for it, because all the talk before the game stuff I'm reading about the boldness of for the entire season, and he had definitely established himself. He wasn't one of those Frady Cat play not to lose coaches. I mean, I would have been totally shocked if he hadn't gone for it. But what the good thing, Mike, you just identified, he had to make a play under duress, and he did, and he totally deserves all the accolades we're going to be throwing him. But as far as him going for it, I did you honestly think he wasn't?
Well, I had a doubt, because Mike is fond of saying that expression, everybody has a plan until they get hit. Right. Everybody has a style until they get to the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. And I will say this, while I picked the Patriots to win, I'm trying to save my reputation somewhat here. Friday, I did say, you can't be the team that plays one game for 3/4 and a different game for the fourth quarter, because you're playing against the New England Patriots, and something kicks in and says, oh my God, we're not supposed to win this game. And Michael, you're so right about that fourth down play, not just because of that play. That play, if you ask me, inspired and led to the fumble. Now, I know you're going to say, wait, one's defense and one's offense. It's a mindset. It's a mindset about being aggressive. We're not stopping. We're not getting out of the way. We are not going to bow down to the Patriots' gods. And when Foles hit that two-yard pass, the biggest two-yard pass in Philadelphia football history, it did what he had been doing through the course of the game. It converted yet another fourth down. They had converted 10 of 16 third downs and 2 fourth downs, which means 12 of the 16 times that they were faced with turning the ball over and giving it back to the Patriots, they didn't. Yep. And that's how you beat the Patriots. And they march down 7 plays later. They go in on a controversial touchdown. That was a controversial touchdown to Ertz at the end. You could have made a case that it goes the other way. And that, I think, led to the defensive play by Brandon Graham, a Michigan kid, by the way, who played for Lloyd Carr, just like Tom Brady did. 10 years later, he comes out of school and ends up being Brady's worst nightmare.
Can I say something? Because Doug Peterson is going to get all the props. He deserves all the props he's going to get. And Mitch, I read your column today. And you know what? Sometimes you can be brave. It's not like some cliche to talk about making brave decisions in sports. But I'm telling you something. Doug Peterson had a chance to be the GOAT in this game, and not the greatest of all time, for starting to chase that missed extra point in the first quarter last night. And guys, how big did that point look as the game wore on? And I was emailing with an NFL general manager during the game, and he said, gee, I hope Peterson is not going to be dumb enough to start chasing that missed point. And he did it immediately, and it changed the scoreboard. And you guys know that point sits up there and gets bigger and bigger and bigger as the game went on. And fortunately, it did not cost the Eagles the game.
Well, speaking of points and so forth, I don't ever recall, certainly not this season, the Patriots losing 2 kicks due to bad snaps. Mm-hmm. And so usually they're impeccable on special teams. Gutkowski has had his shaky moments the last couple of years, but not the snapper. That was we weren't used to seeing that, and that could have played a role.
Let's stay on the Patriots for a second, Bob. I'd like your opinion about why they ultimately lost. One thing that didn't get talked up enough that I think was huge was Brandon Cooks leaving that game as early as he did. He is their best wide receiver. He is an absolute security blanket for Brady. And he played 3 quarters of the game and still had a lead, in the fourth quarter, and still had a chance to win it with 2:21 left without Brandon Cooks.
Yeah.
How big was that, do you think?
It was very important. He has gotten better and better. In the beginning of the year, he wasn't on the same page, as we all say, with Brady. He figured it out. He gave them the threat. He earned his money. He gave them what they got him for, which is a deep burner receiver. They didn't have any, and now they had him. And he was getting better and better, and he and Brady were getting simpatico, and he was a very dangerous weapon. And I just want to say something. I tweeted immediately, and of course got hooted down. The rules. I know the rules. I know that was a legal hit, but in a better world, that wasn't a legal hit. The head thing is the league still won't come to grips with the head thing. Sorry.
Oh yeah.
If that hit is legal, then the other one is, he led with the shoulder. Well, give me that happy horse shit. I don't want to hear that either. He got hit in the head and it was bad and it shouldn't have been. In a better world, that's an ejection right then and there and on we go. But I know it wasn't. I know it's legal. He wasn't a quote unquote defenseless receiver and all that, which just shouldn't matter at all. I'm off my soapbox.
Hey, Mitch, funny. And again, we've talked about, Peterson having the courage to let his team be what it had been. But actually, there were times last night, and they ended up with like a 35-minute to 25-minute edge in time of possession.
Yeah. And 34-26, yep.
Yeah, and I felt, and we had talked about this on Friday. I felt that was going to be a very big deal in this game. And Mitch, there were times when he was, like the Jeffrey interception, I actually wanted them to just keep doing what they were doing. Because as soon as that interception was made, I said to the people I was watching the game with, touchdown Tommy's about to go 90 whatever yards for a touchdown, and this game is about to change again. which it did. I thought Foles, you know, for all of the talk about him being a game manager, he was so much more than that last night. And some of those throws
right.
in traffic were fantastic.
That must be said that as good as he was against Minnesota, he was better on a number of passes last night. That pass to Clement.
Yep.
In the end zone between two guys, that Brady would have a hard time making that thing 10 times in a row. And the pass to Alshon Jeffrey was exactly that. That leap was exactly where it needed to be. I mean, Foles had, I'm amazed, and we'll talk about this a little later on because I don't want to get sidetracked, but I'm amazed to read this morning all the people who were talking about now's the time to trade Nick Foles, get a good draft pick for him, you know, maybe get a second round draft pick for him, when this guy has apparently has these skills that either have been dormant or have been, you know, popping up here and there, but then they go away for a while. I don't know that I would give up on him so fast. But let me go back to finish on Brady. One last thing. Let me ask both you guys. He goes in the second half. This will never happen again statistically. In the second half, he had three drives in a row. He went 75 yards each time for a touchdown. That's never going to happen again. It's just because of the yardage, all right? The fourth time he gets the ball, on the second play, he gets hit by Graham, strip sack, fumble, game over. Now, I don't know if Shaq Wilson missed a block. I don't know if it was just lucky, but we have to say this. The Eagles' defense had been awful up to that. But if you give up three 75-yard drives in a row for touchdowns, you cannot expect to go out there and suddenly win the
Mitch,
game.
Here's the thing. I thought, Bobby, and I bet you have the same reaction. I thought that even though they weren't sacking him in the first quarter of the game, he was getting smacked around quite a bit. And then it stopped. You're right, Mitch. It went away, and it was almost like as they got ready for that last drive, and everybody in the world watching this game said, I know the ending to this the way I know the ending to Casablanca, okay? Right. He's going to go down the field. And it was like they were a fighter gathering themselves and knowing that they whatever they had been doing early or whatever they hadn't been doing on those three long drives, they had to change that now. The kid made a great play. He made a great football play. Derek Barnett ends up with the ball. But let me say this about that play, okay? Karma is a bitch sometimes in sports, okay? So they lose on a turnover this time the way they won on a crazy turnover against the Seahawks that time. That's just sports.
Right. And I'll say what I said again. They were aggressive because the whole mood on the sideline was be aggressive, be aggressive. How many times have we seen when Tom Brady has come out with that amount of time left in a game, regular season or otherwise, that the defense starts to get tentative? It's like, okay, don't let him do this. Don't, you know, back off. Make sure we cover the guys, whatever. And they don't get to him or they don't get aggressive. I think that that pass that Foles threw on fourth down and then the subsequent seven plays in a row for a touchdown gave them that sense. And Brandon Graham said this after the game. It was like, I'm paraphrasing. We sucked up to that point and we said, somebody's got to make a play here now. This is it. This is it. Well, that energy comes from having just done it on offense. And maybe that's why he gets by Shaq and maybe that's why he gets that arm on Brady. And the world will be left to wonder as Brady sat there looking like he was doing, wait a minute. That one play, that's going to end this? I'm supposed to go down the field 80 yards. He almost did it at the end. But that's what turned the fortunes.
They played with an edge for the entire playoffs, and I think this whole underdog thing,
they
seized the underdog thing. When Lane Johnson put that mask on after that the first one, and they rallied around this concept, they really played with a swagger and with an edge. Throughout, they were totally confident. I've heard it said already this morning, and I would buy it, that the one thing that play did, the great touchdown pass to Foles, was that energized them. That sent them on a real high into the locker room.
And
I
Bob, know it, Bobby, yeah. but in the karma is a bitch department, how about LeGarrette Blount?
Oh, LeGarrette Blount, I know. I mean, 18 touchdowns. When they let him go, Mike, I just was, you know, the old head scratch. Wait a minute, this guy's just scored 18 touchdowns for you. He's a lock on first and goal. Well, you know, why don't we want to keep him? And they did fine without him. But in the end, oh yeah, he gets the last laugh, no question. Chris Long was a different matter. But Blunt had an edge.
You want to talk about karma's a bitch? How about go back to that tweet, whenever it was that Giselle. Tom Brady's wife sent out once upon a time. My husband can't bleep and throw and catch the ball at the same time.
She said it, Mitch. She said it in Indy in the runway. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
My husband can't throw and catch the ball. And apparently last night, that was proven true. And, I know they didn't design it for that reason, but that was another one of those sort of mystical, magical things in this game that here, never before in a Super Bowl had Tom Brady attempted to catch a pass and it goes off his fingers. He wasn't going to run down the field and get a touchdown because he's not fast enough and he would have been, he would have jotted out of bounds. But that was a 30, 40 yard play if he catches the ball, and he can't do it. And then in the same game, Nick Foles is wide open and catches it. That has to play on your head. It's like Ethel Merman. Anything you can do, I can do better.
Oh, I mean, I was one of, I'm sure, 5 million tweeters on that subject yesterday. Sure, absolutely.
Hey, okay. Since Brady became a starter, he plays 16 years, they go to 8 Super Bowls. So this is not questioning anything about what may be the last and most enduring dynasty we're going to see in professional sports unless the Warriors keep doing this for a long time. Okay. Bill Belichick made his chops in this business. I'll address this to Bobby Mitch. As a defensive coach, okay, and the slow deconstruction of the Patriots' defense over time was completely on display. And I understand he changed with the modern game, and he became a far more offensive coach. But that was a pathetic defensive performance by the Patriots. And maybe, if Brady doesn't fumble the ball, they go down the field and win the game. But when, Bobby, did you have the idea that they were ever going to make a big stop on a Bill Belichick team yesterday?
No, you didn't. And they lost their last, the remaining playmaker, quote unquote, was Hightower, and they lost him. They didn't have another one at all. Let's go back to the trading of Jamie Collins, exiled to football Siberia for transgressions, and letting Chandler Jones go, who was a legitimate pass rusher, correct if I'm wrong, was in the Pro Bowl, I think, and this year. There was almost a contempt shown about, we'll put a defense together pick up spare parts. And absolutely, they did not have any playmakers. This is the final culmination. Oh, no, defense. But Mike and Mitch, we watched them all year. Watched them all year struggle on defense. Look at the numbers. The numbers in this case do not lie. They were in every category but the one area where they were good was red zone. They forced people into field goals more than touchdowns at a rate that didn't seem commensurate with all the other stats that they were compiling, which were negative stats. And we saw it yesterday with, you already alluded to it, Mitch, the astonishing success that the Eagles had on third or fourth down. Patriots have been very bad getting people off the field all year on third down. And they generally had found a way to win one way or the other. But yesterday they didn't find that way to win.
I'm sitting next to the Detroit Free Press beat writer, Dave Burkett, for the Lions during the game. And we're watching the Eagles rack up point after point, 41 total points, 538 yards. And I turn to him and go, yeah, this is the Lions' new head coach, the head of the defense.
Yeah. Oh,
like great. Meanwhile, their former head coach is running the defense on the other side, giving up 613 yards to the Patriots, and he gets a Super Bowl ring. And we get the bearded one whose defense is, the worst part of the Patriots. And yeah, now come to Detroit and bring that with you. I asked Dave, I said, please, when you go down there, he was running down to go get some quotes. I said, just ask him if he wants to change his mind. It's not too late. Maybe it's not such a great deal. But having said all that, we can't ignore anymore the elephant in the room, although he's smaller than an elephant, Malcolm Butler, who didn't play in the game. Now, I know they used Roe. Roe's a couple inches taller. The whole thing was, you know, we want to go with big guys. I don't buy it. There's something weird going on. Patricia's comments were so vague and so oblique and so weird when they asked him point blank, why didn't you play this guy? He played on 97% of the snaps, the defensive snaps during the regular season. And then he's a special teams player all of a sudden. He had a, you know, he basically said to him, you know, they gave up on me. Screw it. You know, it is what it is. And he clearly is never going to be back as a Patriot. Bobby, you live there. I mean, what was the deal?
It's the number one topic here. That's the number one subplot this morning here. The number one fallout of the game is this peculiar thing. And then people are saying, is it possible that the coach has got such a level of pettiness that because the guy was a day late getting to training camp, getting to Minneapolis was saying that he had an excuse, is that the reason? Because he's done it before. Belichick. He has punished guys for tardiness in the past, or for getting late, coming in late during a snowstorm, But this is, it doesn't make any kind of sense. No explanation suffices until he comes out and tells us, you know, directly.
Bobby, if this, and Mitch, if this was not some kind of major team violation, then Bill was an idiot here. And this would, I said this to Mitch in an email today. This could be the one about power corrupting and absolute power corrupting absolutely. Okay. I'll win with whomever. Except look at the quotes today out of the Eagles locker room. They knew they could exploit Eric Rowe. He had played for the Eagles. They wanted to send Jeffrey Adam and they bench a guy. And again, we may find out that it's some major team violation. Okay. But absent that, they bench a guy who, what, he was in on 98% of the defensive snaps, who won them a Super Bowl 3 years ago with the greatest damn defensive play in the history of the Super Bowl. And Mitch, I think I told you this. I tweeted out in the middle of the game, hold on a second, Malcolm Butler can't cover any better than these guys are covering?
Well, they did make the switch. They did make the switch to Gilmore on Jeffrey, which shut him down, and that worked. But that was after Jeffrey had already done a lot of damage. But here's what I want to know, Bob.
Yeah,
you know, maybe the beat writers knew this. But, I mean, was this like told all week long in practice, or was this something that Belichick and Patricia sprung on them? You know, an hour before they go out there, because, you know, it's not just about Butler. It's about the other guys playing with him. They all talk and they go, well, he's not playing. Yeah. He's not playing. I mean, that affects a team. So was this in the plan and we just didn't find out about it, or was it a last-minute decision?
We don't know. There's no one. The two Boston papers, I have not seen anything to answer that question. I'm reading now. I'm looking right now as we speak. Very quickly, let me give you for people out there, the Patricia quote. This is Matt Patricia quote. We just played all the guys we could to try to help us win in whatever packages we had. Different situations came up and we were just trying to move some things around. He was active for the game, and anybody that is active for the game is ready to go. We just had a situation where we had some matchups and packages that we went with, period, end quote.
Okay.
That's all.
Except Eric Rowe said after the game that he only knew he was starting over Butler right before the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't the plan. Eric Rowe allowed that he was surprised by the turn of events.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Quote, that wasn't the plan, Rowe said of Butler. He is an amazing player.
Well, there you
unquote.
Go. I mean, I don't get that. Yeah, if you're a day late to get to the Super Bowl, and that is a capital offense, you should find out when you show up. Hey, buddy, guess what? You're not playing. You know, what do you practice with the team all week? You do everything with everybody. Yes, there's 10 other guys out there on defense. You're going to shake them up and rattle that whole sort of team chemistry thing in the biggest game of the year because why?
Well, you know, the opinion on this topic, the one opinion and only one that ultimately matters with regard to why Belichick did what he did, of course, is the man who signs his paycheck. And now we can circle back to the ESPN.com story and revisit it now with this piece of interesting evidence that there's something might be a miss in paradise, mm-hmm. Foxborough, Mass. So we stay tuned for that one.
I want to ask two big questions in a second. One, Mike, you said something before we started about you think the Patriots dynasty is done, and that's a sentence that deserves high play in the podcast. And I also want to talk about Nick Foles. But I'm going to first say something about Freshly, one of our sponsors today. We all live busy lives, and unfortunately, there's not enough hours in the day to get everything done. Freshly is the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy no matter what life throws your way. No more worrying about having to figure out what's for dinner, and especially no mess to clean up after it's over with. You come home, there it is, cooked by chefs. And when I say cooked by chefs, I mean some really good food that is healthy for you as well. You want to check out some of the things on the menu? Okay, how about steak peppercorn? I couldn't make that if my life depended on it. Baked penne marinara, penne bolognese, homestyle meatloaf, slow-cooked beef chili. Many, many different opportunities, many different dishes that you can eat, all healthy made. Customize your weekly meals from their constantly changing, rotating menu, more than 30 different chef-created options. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get your deliveries when you want them, and every single meal comes with a detailed and easy-to-read overview of each ingredient featured in the meal, so you know all the nutritional, all the caloric, the whole deal. There's nothing better than knowing that no matter what happens in your daily life, you have a chef-cooked dinner waiting at home. Check out this week's menu created by Freshly Chefs and get $25 off of your first order of six chef-cooked dinners, plus free shipping. All you have to do is go to freshly.com/sportsreporters. You'll feel relieved to come home to that chef cook meal every night with Freshly. Freshly.com/sportsreporters for $25 off your first order. Order today and see what life's like when you no longer have to think about the chore of dinner. Okay, Michael, you made a statement before we went on the air that I thought was fascinating, and I think our audience would want to hear it. You didn't just see this as a loss to the Giants that you then come back and win several more Super Bowls. You see this as maybe the dismantling of the New England dynasty?
Not dismantling. I just think, Mitch, let me back up. After the Yankees lost to the Diamondbacks in Game 7 in 2001, a game that they had won until they didn't win, until Luis Gonzalez blooped one over Derek Jeter's head, our pal Buster Olney actually wrote a book about that, built around that game, called The Last Night of the Yankee Dynasty. Okay, there was no reason to believe that they weren't, they had won four World Series already. They were about to make it 5 in 6 years, all that stuff. And stuff was happening in front of our eyes in plain sight. Here's what I think. I think that Tom Brady is not going to be better at 41 than he is at 40. And with all the stuff that happened this year, I don't think they were great. I think they were good, okay? The Steelers' win became less impressive after we saw them get dismantled by the Jacksonville Jaguars. So when you look at their whole season, Bob, you may disagree with me on this. The best win they had, to me, was the win they had before the Super Bowl at home in a championship game against the Jaguars, who in the fourth quarter just weren't ready for prime time. I think there are signs of deterioration there. I think that Seth Wickersham didn't make up all that stuff about Kraft and Belichick and Brady. It got swept under the rug because, hey, when they got the ball at 33-32, it looked like they were going to win. I just don't. My favorite thing in sports is when we hear, oh, the early favorite for next year's Super Bowl is the Patriots. I don't happen to think so. I think that in many ways, last night may turn out to be the last night of the Patriots dynasty. That's just what I think.
Well, the defense is certainly a serious problem. We've already discussed it, and they need to address it if they're going to think about becoming a serious Super Bowl contender in 2019. I think you mentioned that we both have made allusions to the Sports Illustrated, to the ESPN.com piece, Wickersham. I never doubted for a second that he was making anything up. I thought he was on target. Something definitely was going on, and now we've got little. We got reason to think that there's going to be an interesting offseason here, no question. So, and I agree with you also, Mike. They weren't overwhelming this year. They have benefited. Just think about this, guys. They've won, I believe, 9 straight divisions, and they have benefited from such a woeful lack of legitimate competition in the AFC East. that helps you, you know, pad your record and on. We know the benefits of it, and gets you jumpstart you into a buy, and then maybe even a number one seed, which they had again. So
it always helps when you can play at home and all the rest of it. But I wonder, with how this is shaking out, if they're not shedding Patricia, who clearly, you know, isn't doing great things with their defense anymore. So, of course, send them to Detroit. That's what we do. But if they end up keeping McDaniels, who now I'm hearing he may not go to Indianapolis, their offensive side, if they're healthy, remember, you know, look at the guys who didn't play, who were out for the year. If they get them back next year, look at Brandon Cooks, who didn't play in the Super Bowl. You know, if they've got Gronk, if they've got Deion Lewis, if they've got their receivers all back, that's a pretty potent offensive team. And Brady at 41 isn't going to be much different than Brady at 40, you know, this whole thing about how he takes care of his body. So maybe by shedding Patricia, bringing in a new defensive coordinator, maybe Belichick rededicates himself to that. Maybe they're right back there. Certainly the division's not going to change, so they're going to have that advantage again. And we'll see what other powers are rising in the AFC. But, Mike, you know, I hear what you're saying. I mean, there are losses that take something out of you, you know, and they were mortalized. You know, there's that famous scene in that movie, The Untouchables, you know, with the remake of it, where Kevin Costner and all of them, and they're breezing through everything, and they're knocking down all the warlords, and, you know, they're taking them all out. And then all of a sudden, one of their guys gets killed, and they write on in the elevator on blood, "Touchable." You know, and suddenly you realize, okay, they're human too. And seeing Tom Brady in that posture, you know, with his hands over his knees like the bus just left and he missed it. I wonder if that's not one of those moments, you know.
Mitch, you're right. And remember last year when he threw the pick six in the first half against the Falcons? And he sat there, you know, he made a futile play, and I forget who returned it all the way. But he ended up kind of sitting on the ground there. The difference was he had a whole half of football left to play. Right. Last night, he kind of knew the game was over after Derek Barnett picks up the ball. Listen, they're very good. And you know, they're still playing in the AFC East, which is one of the softest places to land in the history of pro football. I get all that. And you maybe can stump me by saying, okay, who's going to beat them? All I'm saying is that the other team, to me, was better last night. That's not clearly better, because it was a one touchdown game. I just think that it's not going to go on forever. And maybe he'll be as good at 41 as he is at 40. Maybe he'll make liars out of all of us who say it's a joke when he talks about playing until he's 45. But to me, the signs of deterioration are there. And I'm not one of those guys that say, well, you need great defense to win in the NFL. Not anymore, you don't. If the last few Super Bowls have proved anything, it's proved that. I got a bad feeling about the Patriots going forward. And listen, we could have a lot of laughs about this in a year. That's just what I think.
If Brady were to deteriorate by 10% next year, where would that rank him in among the quarterbacks? I'd still be a top 10 quarterback, wouldn't he?
Ten quarterback for sure.
He'd still be top five.
If he only loses 10%. But is that worth a game or two? Does that mean they play a game on the road in the playoffs instead of, you know, just a little thing? I mean, they didn't lose this Super Bowl by 30. They lost it by one play.
But that's the
difference.
Eight Super Bowls for Brady, and every one was a one possession game. And a one-score game, I'll put it that way.
And Bob, we've talked about this before, and you know this is right, because how many times Mitch and Bob and I have had this conversation. We know how close they are to being 8-0 in the Super Bowl. And we also know that now that they're 5-3, how close they are to being 3-5 in the big game.
It's right. Well, 0-8, Mike.
But yeah, they could have lost to the Panthers.
They could have lost every game. They could have won every game.
They could have lost to the Rams that time when touchdown Tommy took him down the field the first time.
So yeah, they could. I've been saying this for a long time that they would. You know, they could have won or lost each of those games when they managed to win, you know, 5 out of 7. And you know, oh, by the way, did you see that Did you see the two Bills in that moment when Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick are in Giants in MetLife Stadium and they're looking at the trophy case with the four Super Bowl trophies? And Belichick says, and Parcells says, there's the one you gave away one. Oh, Bill, he says, we gave away one. And you're talking about the Tyree one.
Well, right, I got a question for you guys, because Mitch, Belichick, you referenced this earlier, and before we move on this game, what would you do if you're the Eagles about Nick Foles? What would you do? And I'll expand the question this way. Can you get him for a second round draft choice the way the 49ers got Jimmy Garoppolo, or would it take a first? And how much are you willing to mortgage of your team's future? Just say he is available for a trade off of what we've seen off of the last month.
I'd market him because I'm assuming a full recovery for Wentz. This isn't like Brady versus Garoppolo, because Wentz is a kid. Wentz is the future. I mean, it's such an easy call for me. If you assume, you know what you have in Wentz too, and don't tell me Wentz isn't better than Foles. So I don't think it's a hard one. I think that they have a wonderful asset now to market. That's what I would think.
Well, given what I heard last night in Minnesota, and all the talk about God and faith and family, and I mean, it wasn't just Nick Foles; it was literally every guy who went to the microphone from
including Doug Peterson.
So this is that, okay, if this is that kind of a team, I think the first thing you do is you go talk to Nick Foles about coming back as a backup, because the Eagles' best play is to have Carson Wentz starting him in case something happens to Carson Wentz again. You know, once you've got a knee injury, you're always suspect. I mean, is it a given that Nick Foles wouldn't return? Remember, he was almost out of football. And he only decided to come back. He said, I want to play for Andy Reid. So clearly, where he plays and who he plays for play a lot in his mind. If he accepts the fact that, like, I had an amazing year, but I'm not better than Wentz, but I'll be happy to be with the Eagles. I won a Super Bowl with them. Then I think you keep him. I mean, I don't think you have to drum the guy up.
Mitch, they have him for another year. He's under contract for next season.
But everybody's acting like sell him now. It's a high stock. And if Wentz gets another injury, where are you going to be? I mean, I don't know. Is it beyond the pale to think you could sign him to another deal or extend his deal?
Listen, if there's one thing this season taught us, it's the unbelievable value of a solid backup quarterback. We found out with the Minnesota Vikings. We found out with the Philadelphia Eagles, who are now the champions of the whole stinking world. And we found the flip side of this when Aaron Rodgers went down, and guess who they had? Brett Hundley backing him up. Now, if they've got Nick Foles, who knows? They might have gone to the Super Bowl this year.
Well, I mean, I was just basing on, I think I'd have to back up what I said by thinking, this guy seems like the kind of guy, maybe he'll take a hometown discount, quote unquote. Maybe you get him at a very reasonable rate. I know he's under contract now, but I mean, maybe he's would say, hey, look, I know who I am. I'm fine. The kids, I know how good the kid is too. I know how fortunate I am, blah, blah, blah. You know, maybe he's very happy sitting there behind Wentz.
It's a very interesting situation, because if you're, all right, let me ask you guys this. And then before we get to our parting shots, okay, let me ask you this. Do you think that Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback than Nick Foles is?
Yes.
Oh, you do? I don't.
I think over the long haul. Well, you know, I don't know. I guess if you played Nick Foles three more years, you could find out. But over the body of work that has been done up till now, yes, Cousins has proven to be better on the total. Not better over the course of the last 3 weeks. But better on the total, in my view.
I would echo that. Logic tells me
Kirk Cousins has had three really good years. And Nick Foles had a year when he was, 27 TDs and two picks or whatever Chip Kelly. And then he's had this month that feels like a year.
I want to add just one last thing. I grew up in Philadelphia. One of my first jobs was selling programs at Vet Stadium and across the street at the Spectrum as well. I sold programs for Philadelphia Eagles games. I was 11 and 12 years old. I now live in Detroit. There is a similarity between Philadelphia and Detroit that I don't want to put out there for our national audience. Philly has won titles in hockey, for sure. in basketball with Dr. J and Wilt Chamberlain, even most recently in baseball. But Philly, to me, was always a football town, just like Detroit is a football town. They just got so frustrated with the haplessness periodically of the team that the negativity associated with it became like part of the aura. I am really happy that Philly gets a football championship now. And anyone who grew up there knows what I'm talking about, that for all the basketball, for all the baseball, we've been waiting for the Eagles to win something for so long in Philadelphia, and I knew there was something about this team when we were talking. I was talking to Angelo Cataldi, who does the hugely popular morning show in Philadelphia on WIP, and he's always negative, you know, he's always picking. And I said to him, "So what could you find wrong with this team?" This was like 2 weeks ago. He said, "You know what? I actually like this team. I'm embarrassed to say it, but I have nothing bad to say." I said, okay, this is the perfect team, the perfect time. Congratulations, Philadelphia, for finally getting the team that I think you most wanted to win a championship and have had to wait this long to come home with the Super Bowl. And to do it against Tom Brady and the Pats makes it that much sweeter. So have a tasty cake, have a Schlitz, have a cheesecake, cheesesteak, have a water ice, have a soft pretzel, everything that is Philadelphia, and live it up.
Maybe even some Scrapple.
Some Ooh. Scrapple, yeah.
All right, before we get to parting shots, let me tell you about Mattress Firm. Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. Not for Malcolm Butler, but for most people. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this. They're more than just mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, they have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback, except, you know, when you're not your coach's favorite cornerback the way Malcolm is. So go to mattressfirm.com/podcast now to see what deals are happening. They even offer you a, get this is unbelievable, a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. It's time for our parting shots, and I'll lead off. There have been 52 Super Bowls, and the games seem to be getting better and better as we go after all those years when they were stiffs. But I'm going to tell you this. There's never been a story better than Nick Foles. This is a story that's not just as old as sports. It's a romantic story out of show business, the one about the understudy stepping out of the chorus and becoming a star. And there have been other backup quarterbacks who have won the Super Bowl. Jeff Hostetler did it against the Bills in Tampa one time for the Giants. But this was different. Who did Foles do it against? He did it against Bill Belichick's Patriots. He did it against a team quarterbacked by Tom Brady on a night when Brady, the GOAT, threw for over 500 yards in the big game. In the biggest game of Nick Foles' life, when he was supposed to be the other guy, he played quarterback as well as Brady did. Again, there have been so many great stories over the last half century, the first great one at quarterback being Joe Namath. There's never been one better than Nick Foles.
There are two Americas. Which one do you live in? In the first, professional sports predominate. The chit-chat is dominated by discussions primarily centered on the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, or perhaps even the NHL. If it's Portland or Seattle, it might even be about MLS. In the other America, life revolves around college. It might be a major state U. It might be a local private school. It might be a national school of interest, such as Duke or that perennial polarizer, Notre Dame. And for those people, Wednesday is a high holy day. Wednesday is football signing day. The verbal commitments are in. Now comes the payoff when recruits sign those precious letters of intent. This has become a major spectacle. TV will be all over it. It's also very good for the hat concessions. Now, you may be hanging on this for all I know.
Oh, my God,
but where
yes.
I live, the thing is a vague and distant rumor. I live in a pro town. We don't give a hoot whom Rivals or ESPN will rank numbers 121 or 1,021. We just kind of wait till the season starts and see whoever they put out there. But if you live in that other America, well, I hope you have a happy signing day.
Thank you. As a member of that other America, we salute you. All three of us are old enough to remember when the Super Bowl entertainment used to be up with people. Today, thanks to the internet, it's down with people. Pink had barely finished her national anthem when social media was trolling her last night, someone saying she sucked as a singer. Amazingly, she engaged that person back on social media and wrote, "Yeah, well, at least I sucked while singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl."
There you go.
Justin Timberlake barely had finished his theatrical halftime concert before trolls came after him, daring to sing with an image of Prince projected behind him. Others slammed him for not bringing Janet Jackson back, as if we needed another wardrobe malfunction. Others slammed his choice of costume. Social media has some fine uses, but weighing in on everything Super Bowl is not one of them. What used to be a fun experience amongst friends watching a game on TV is now an addiction to iPhones and immediate gratification of checking and seeing what the lowest of us is saying to the next lowest of us. It's all negative. It's all depressing. It's all unnecessary. Bring back up with people. Then again, maybe not. I can only imagine what the trolls of the world would be saying about them.
You know what, Mitch? I thought Timberlake was great.
Yeah, until you started reading about him, I thought he was good too. But apparently the world has other opinions, or at least the world that types immediately after they hear something. Hey, listen, that's going to wrap up today's show. Come back and join us again on Friday. We do this every Monday and Friday. We were so busy with Super Bowl today, but there's a trouble brewing in Cleveland Cavalier land. And when LeBron James says, "You should take us off national television, we're not worthy of it," there's something to talk about. We'll deal with that and other things on Friday. You can get this podcast, if you enjoy it, on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your popular podcast. Leave us a review if you enjoyed it. We always enjoy finding out what you think. And until Friday, when we'll be back, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.